Of Marsh's Boat. It's quite packed to say that from a certain perspective, these parshios are very difficult for shul rabbis because you want to speak about the parsha, but you also need to save your material for Pesach. And there's so much about Pesach and this week's parsha and last week's parsha, you have to kind of work to find the non-Pesach themes to talk about during the parsha so you can save the Pesach for the Pesach. But we're not going to pass over all the Passover material, but there's a lot that's about other themes as well. So we'll do the best we can in the time that we have to address what we can find in these psukim, but essentially a lot of Maseches Pesachim, a big chunk of Maseches Pesachim and of the themes of Pesach are found not only in these parshios, but specifically in this Aliyah. So there's quite a lot to look in, and we'll do the best we can. So just jump in with the first pasuk. Pasuk tells us, pasuk Dalet here, Vayomer Moshe Koamar Hashem Kachat Sos Halayla Ani Yotze Besoch Mitzrayim. So here I try to teach my children that they shouldn't say like so much in a sentence. You should just add the word like. It doesn't always come across so well. But here, Chazal and the Pasuk, they seem to contradict that lesson. Because here we find the word like put into the Pasuk. In Hebrew, it's just a letter, but it represents the word. That Moshe says, Kachatzos halayla. God quotes God as saying, like Chatzos, around Chatzos, I will be coming within Mitzrayim. So why is that? So why does he say kachatzos and not just chatzos, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said? So the Gemara in Maseches Brachos tells us that one should always talk in a way that is not so confident. You should always talk as if you're not sure, that you should say you don't know, because otherwise you could be accused of lying, whether you say caught in a lie or accused of a lie, that Moshe was afraid that even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu is precise, but who knows if the Egyptians were so precise. So if he's going to say this is going to happen at Chatzos, and they're going to say, well, it's 1158 or it's 1202, so then they'll accuse him of being a liar. So in order to prevent that, so you say like, you say approximately Chatzos, and that's one of the lessons that Moshe is teaching us. So that's interesting, this idea that a person should always leave some room for doubt in how he expresses himself. But there's also, I think, another lesson here that's quite powerful, because if you think about it, and this relates to a point that Rav Simcha Zossel Breud in the Sefer Slamdarich notes, that isn't it strange that he should worry about being accused of lying here, when here, this is now the 10th Makkah, and he's made prediction after prediction, and they've always come true, and here the big things are going to come true. So you really think that if it happens at 1202 or at 1157, they'll say, you see, you're a liar, you don't know what you're talking about, the whole thing was fake. And how could it be that a detail like that, in the face of all these correct predictions, that is going to undermine the message, that's going to have him face accusations of lying? So what Rav Breud writes there is, you see the power of sheker. You see how much people are willing to delude themselves. And I think connected to that is really something that we see often in contemporary discourse, that people who are in arguments with others or who want to win an argument, whether legitimately or not, are always very quick to pull out the lie card to accuse the other one of lying, usually without sufficient basis, and often in points that have no relevance to the main argument, but it's really just a type of ad hominem argument, a way of trying to discredit your opponent. So you claim that he's a liar, and you take any possible opportunity to do that, even though it doesn't really affect the content and may not be at all justified in the accusation, but it's something that is used as a tool and as an underhanded tool to try to knock out your opponent. So perhaps that's what Chazal are telling us here also, that essentially that could have happened, that they would have said, okay, yes, obviously everything you've been saying is true, but you're a liar because of this, and we'll use that to undermine you. So we're advised, so don't leave yourself open up to that, and be aware that sometimes unscrupulous people will try to seize on wherever they think there's some room to accuse you of being a liar, and that's how they do their damage. This phrase here that God says in a Yotze, Besoch Mitzrayim, that I will leave really throughout Mitzrayim. So as the Naim Torah notes, one would have thought that the more grammatical word here would be Nichnas, I'm entering into Mitzrayim. So he suggests that here to attach HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the death of the Bechorim through his entry, it's not b'chavadik, and the idea of focusing on leaving is a way of emphasizing the siluk hashchina, to say that God is essentially taking his presence away and leaving this terrible punishment in its wake. And of course, the next pasuk tells us what that is. Amaz kol b'chor v'eretz Mitzrayim, mi b'chor paro hayoshev al kiso, ad b'chor hashivcha, asher achar harichayim, b'chol b'chor behema. So here, there's going to be this terrible plague that all of the firstborn are going to die, even the firstborn of animals. And that's striking. Why is that so important? And the Rishonim have different interpretations about this. Some suggest it's because the Mitzvah, Rashi tells us, because the Mitzvah worshipped animals. And we want to make it clear that they're not the ones doing this, that they're themselves subject to this. Others suggest it's to show that the Mitzrayim are in the same category as the behemoths through their behavior, so they're all treated together. And it's going to bring about terrible screaming. There's going to be this terrible screaming, this terrible wailing that one can't even imagine. And Rav Shmuel Shnofel Hirsch comments here that the point is that Paro should be able to relate kibyochel to what he was doing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to the Jewish people as Bnei Bechori, and they were being tortured and tormented by Paro. So as a Mida Kineged Mida, so Paro should have this strike against his own Bechor, and the whole nation should go through that as a way of conveying, so to speak, a Mida Kineged Mida of what they were doing. So here, the dogs were quiet, and what that imagery is meant to suggest is interesting. People who recite this pasuk when they are afraid of a dog attacking them, and they invoke this notion. But somehow the dogs, through their quietness, were helpful to the Jews at this stage. And the Gemara says, that's why we also learn, the Gemara Pesachim tells us that when the Torah says, if you have a nevela, if you have a animal that was otherwise kosher but wasn't shechted properly, so now it can't be used, so then it's not asur bahana, you're allowed to benefit from it, you just can't eat it. So you should give it to the dogs. That's something you can do. You can feed your dogs with the nevela. And Chazal tell us that this was a reward. You can feed any animal with it, but the idea of highlighting that specifically you should give it to your dogs is a way of giving them their reward for their help at this time. And it's a sign that Kadosh Baruch Hu does not hold back the reward of any creature, even for the smallest things. And here God is distinguishing between the Jews and the Mitzrayim. So we are saved. We don't go through this terrible punishment. And we have a practice since then of fasting, or of at least having a theoretical fast on Erev Pesach, the fast of the firstborn, the fast of the Bechor. And on the surface, that would seem to be a hodah, a recognition of the fact that we were saved, that this discrimination, this distinction happened, that God killed the firstborn of Mitzrayim, but not of the Jewish people. So the whole reflection of that in the idea of the Tainus, together with what we do nowadays in terms of that Tainus, is a much longer discussion. We won't be able to look at any other psukim if we talk about that, but I'll just mention that they gave a share this week about that topic, which is on YU Torah. So if you want to supplement this, you can listen to that and see a little bit more about that topic of the Bechor and their being rescued. Okay, so let's skip around a little bit so that we'll be able to talk about more. So let's go to now the next parak begins in the Saliyah, And it tells us about beyond this, the Yomer was the Pasuk Aleph, the Yomer Hashem on Moshe, the Aharon, the Eretz Mitzrayim Lemor. So God spoke to Moshe and Aaron to say, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chadashim, Rishon Hu Lachem, L'Chadshe Hashan. So this is apparently the first mitzvah in the Torah, as we know from the first Rashi in Chumash, that Rashi asks, why doesn't the Torah start with Dinim, with Halachos? And it says it could have started with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. So the idea that this mitzvah is appropriate specifically now, and appropriate as the first mitzvah of the Torah, so there are many themes to examine here. One theme that Rav Soloveitchik developed at length, but really also the Sfarno is getting to this as well, that the idea of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, that this is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, but the Torah is phrasing it specifically by saying, okay, this month is yours. And the idea of saying that we have time, that we have control over time, we have access over time, is drawing an absolute contrast between freedom and slavery. That the idea of a slave is one who has no control over his time. He's not allowed to choose what to do. He has to just serve his master. And the notion of liberty is both the ability and the responsibility, the tremendous responsibility that comes with the ability to make decisions about time and to have control about time. And Eved is pater from mitzvah sasei shazman grama. He's not able to be responsible for mitzvahs that are on the clock because he has no control over that. And liberty here is freedom, is saying that you do now have control over your time. And in the Sefer Ohel Moshe, he suggests that maybe that's also why we say in the Haggadah that Yochel Rosh Chodesh, that maybe we could have already done Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim from Rosh Chodesh. So what's the significance of Rosh Chodesh? It's the reflection of this mitzvah, that this mitzvah is the opening to freedom, is the opening to liberty, and therefore when we talk about that great event in the Haggadah, maybe even going back to Rosh Chodesh, it would have been appropriate. The Avni Nezer has a similar drasha where he writes that the idea is also that Kiddush HaChodesh, separate and apart from the language of Lachem, or really connected to that, but an additional level, is a reflection of the fact that the Jewish people literally could control time, because the ability to decide when Rosh Chodesh would be, where we are told that they could manipulate that if necessary. So that has tremendous significance. That establishes when Yontif is, that establishes how old people are halachically, that has all kinds of ramifications. So the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh actually puts control of time into human hands, into the hands of the Jews. And perhaps that's here also to reflect the fact that the whole Yeshua here, that being saved from Mitzrayim was supernatural, required miraculous intervention. So the first mitzvah that follows that is this, so to speak, miraculous mitzvah, which gives the Jewish people control over time. The Psikta has also an important drasha here, that the idea of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem can also be read as HaChidush Hazeh Lachem, this renewal. And this is also one of the key themes. The Rosham Shnufal Hirsch has a long drasha about this, where he discusses that really that's the ikkar here, that Chodesh really comes from his Chadshus, comes from the notion of renewal, and that Rosh Chodesh is the beginning of the process of the renewal, and that's how the Pasuk is emphasizing Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chadshe Hashana. This is the beginning of the process of renewal, and the whole mitzvah of Kiddush Al Pi HaRiyah is that we should connect to that theme, and that we should come back to Hashem at the time of the moon's renewal. So Hirsch goes on in this drasha to discuss that nowadays, that when we have a set calendar, so you might think, okay, so we're now more sophisticated, we don't have to go through this whole system, we have everything worked out in advance. And he emphasizes quite the opposite, that the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, with the active process of Kiddush Al Pi HaRiyah, every month was a way of connecting to this notion of renewal that is so central to our national identity. We're told that the Jews define themselves by the moon, that they are the nation that counts time by the moon, and that has tremendous significance because we want to connect to that theme of renewal. So the fact that we can't do that anymore, we don't have the Sanhedrin, we don't have all the parts in place, so instead we have to have a set calendar, so it's nice that we can plan out our Pesach vacations in advance, but we're losing something very significant here, and we're losing that, we're missing that connection, and that's tremendous. And he then goes on to discuss a much maligned concept, one of the dinim that nowadays people always talk about how they wish they could reverse, is the idea of Yantif Sheni, the notion that we have this extra day of Yantif in Chutz Laretz, which is added on to all the Yom Tovim that the Torah only has one day for. So many people consider the second of Yantif to be a burden, and understandably, if they have to go to work, so it's hard to get an extra day off, but we can appreciate it more as an aspect of Kedusha, but for some people it's difficult. But they also complain that it doesn't seem to make sense, that the notion of Yom Tov Sheni is because of Sveika D'Yoma, because we weren't sure what day was or wasn't Yom Tov, so we had to add on an extra day, but that's not relevant anymore. Now we know, only decades, centuries in advance, when Yom Tov is, it's all set. So why should we have any such concern of Sveika D'Yoma? So the Gemara says already that we don't, that it's a minig avosenu bi'adenu, which was then solidified into a din d'rabbanan, but what's the purpose? So Rav Hirsch emphasizes here that adrabba, this is an incredibly important idea, and especially in Chutz Laretz and Galus, where we're all the more aware of just how disconnected we are from the perfect system. And so therefore, having this enactment to remind us of what we're missing and to make us have some sense of loss about this is crucially important, and we should appreciate what it is that Yom Tov Sheni is meant to convey for us. A fascinating drashi, as you can read that inside in the writings of Rosh Hashanah Rafal Hirsch.
I just want to say it reminded me a little bit like Prism Bowl, like the idea that it was only enacted to remind us what the real situation should be. We don't have that now.
The synergy. It's right, so that's how we discussed Prism Bowl a few months ago, so a little bit of a synergy for this year's Limud, certainly. But also, it's of a piece with other Dinim D'Rabbanan that we see, that sometimes a Din D'Rabbanan is there in order to keep a concept alive and to help us remember something, specifically in the context of Beis HaMikdash and Galus. So the idea that this is something that should keep that awareness up is certainly a very important idea. And it could also be, I think that Paris Yosef has a discussion about this, that maybe that's also why we have the practice of announcing the Molad in Shul. In Chutz Laretz, we make this big announcement to everybody on Shabbos Mevorchim. This past Shabbos, we told everybody when the Molad was in Yerushalayim. So that's a way of keeping this awareness alive. And that's a way of making sure that we're conscious of just what the significance is here. The Avdi Nezer also had a drasha where he talks very elaborately about the idea that Torah is the only thing that is really alive in the world and the only thing that has the power of renewal. And Chazal say in the Pasuk, Ein Chadash Tachas HaShemesh, that Tachas HaShemesh Ein Chadash, everything is static, but the Laila HaShemesh in the world of Kedusha and Torah, so there is Hischadshus, there is renewal. So we connect it to the moon, because even though the moon is also physical, but it's a way of at least representing that concept of Hischadshus. So it makes sense that that should be the first mitzvah, because that sets the whole theme of Torah being that which is alive, in contrast to other things. And he suggests also, it's an elaborate point, that we know this from the first Rashi in Chumash, when the Rashi says that why don't we start the Torah with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, and instead we start with Ma'aseh Bereishis. And Ma'aseh Bereishis is there to establish, apparently, according to Rashi, that we have the right to live in Eretz Yisrael, and no one should say that we stole it. But he notes, you could ask the question, well, okay, God created the world, and he gave it to somebody, but if it's conquered by somebody else, so then how do you know that the original owner can come back and take it? Maybe once he's given it away, so he doesn't have any access to it anymore. So this is all connected to this idea of renewal, that Torah is constantly renewing. It's not a passive force, but it's something that is ongoing, and therefore, just like that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in the world and with the Jewish people is ongoing, which the theme we'll come back to in a moment. But just also to note about the power of the moon and the symbolism of the moon and our association with it, there's actually a minig that is discussed in Shulchan Aruch and elsewhere about marriage dates, that it's ideal when it's possible and when it doesn't affect too many other things, that if you're picking a day to get married, so you should get married in the first half of the month. It's called the Milui Halavana. That's when the moon is getting bigger. So for the first half of the month, it's getting bigger, and then the second half of the month, it's called B'choser Halavana. It's when the moon is getting smaller. So there's a notion that it's more inspirational to get married in the first half of the month, because that has this theme of renewal and this theme of growth and of development, and therefore it's considered to be a positive message for those who are getting married. It's discussed in the Shulchan Aruch really as a defense, because one might think that this is nechash, one might think that this is superstition. So the poskim discuss whether or not it is superstition, and they explain that yes, if you make your whole life based on this, because you think that you're only going to have a successful marriage if you get married in the first half of the month, so yes, that would be superstition. So if you have the hall picked and the caterer already paid for and everything is already, and then you realize, oh wait a minute, it's the end of the month, so I'll push it till the beginning of the next month so that I'll get this school up, and you're going to have to lose your deposit and find a new hall and find a new caterer and find a new kala because she doesn't want to pick that date. So if you're going to arrange everything based on that, so then that's nechush, that's talk of superstition. But we have the idea of looking for inspiration and recognizing that there is bad effect sometimes. So to look to the moon and to look to the moon growing and increasing is considered to be a positive symbol, and that's also something that we connect to. So all of this relates to why HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem is such a important theme, but also just to explore it a little bit further. So the notion of the month specifically, that is to be the Rosh Chodeshim, the beginning of the year, so that is Nisan. And the idea of Nisan as the beginning of the year, and we know we have confusion always because we relate to both Tishrei and Nisan as the first month, and the whole discussion in the Gemara about when the world was really created. So Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests that when we look to creation, so it's not just that the world was put into place, but we also focus on themes of purpose and themes of hanhaga. So the world needs the Torah, and the Torah doesn't exist without the preparation for the Torah. So this is now all the stage of preparation for the Torah. So therefore, we emphasize that as the first month. We could also suggest that looking to Nisan together with Tishrei is to emphasize another theme of Emunah. So yes, we believe that God created the world, but there were also people who believed that God created the world. They weren't necessarily atheists, but they thought that was the end of the story. It was a belief system called deism. Some of the founding fathers of America were deists. So the notion of deism means, okay, you think the God, you believe God exists, he created the world, but you don't believe that he has any continued involvement in it. So we want to emphasize that this is all a part of the Emunah, that the creation of the world is one step, but also Yetzias Mitzrayim, which represents God activating history in a specific way on our behalf and really being involved in a continuing fashion in the ways of the world. So that is what Nisan adds to creation. And therefore, to have that complete emunah, that it's not just about the initial creation, but it's about God's continuing involvement, that is what Nisan represents in a sense. And it's interesting. So this could connect to other things. Today's Daf Yomi has a reference to Kiddush. And when it comes to Kiddush, which is also connected to these parashios, because Chazal tell us that Kiddush requires Yetzias Mitzrayim as a part of it. So these parashios are relevant to the mitzvah of Kiddush in that sense. And yeah, when it comes to that din, so it's not clear whether it's Ma'akev or not. There was a big machlokas about this. The Magen Avraham was of the opinion that if you go to shul Friday night, you yosei Kiddush min HaTorah. And he was referring to, even if they don't recite Kiddush in shul, as many of us have a minute to do, but let's say they don't recite Kiddush, but they daven Ma'ariv, so the Ma'ariv of Friday night, so that reference to Shabbos is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Zachar Shema Shabbos Lekadsho. You fulfill the mitzvah in the Torah of Kiddush. And others disagreed. Others said, no, it's not enough to be Yotzei Kiddush with that because you need Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's also a part of it. So the Mechassinuch thought the Magen Avraham was wrong. If you don't have Yitzias Mitzrayim, so then you can't be Yotzei Kiddush. So the role of Yitzias Mitzrayim in Kiddush is interesting because it does seem from the Gemara Tzedim in HaTorah, and yet you do have this view that many do subscribe to, that it's not Ma'akev. So the idea that it could be a Din in HaTorah, but Kiddush could be fulfilled without it, is a little bit hard to explain. So how does that work? So Rav Asher Weiss in one place suggested that it's really Din in HaTorah, but it's from a different place, that the idea of mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim in Kiddush is a din in Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we're supposed to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. And among the opportunities that we take to do that is also when we're reciting Kiddush, we take that opportunity also. So that is a din in HaTorah, but it's not going to invalidate your Kiddush if you don't do it, because it's not a din in Kiddush. It's a din in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Rav Yonasan Sacks, on the Fitzfarm, so he says a little differently. He says, if I remember correctly, the reason it can be considered a din just like chachila, even if it's a din min haTorah, how would it be that it's not ma'akev and still a din min haTorah? So the way he understands is that essentially it's an extension of the theme of Kiddush. So when we talk about Kiddush, we're testifying to the fact that God created the world, but we want to make a more complete message, that not just that God created the world and left it, but he also continues to be involved in history, as Yetzias Mitzrayim reflects. So a more complete statement of Kiddush is including Yetzias Mitzrayim in it, but still it's just an extension of what we're trying to say in Kiddush. So maybe you could get away without it. That's the machlokas. Maybe if you don't recite, so then you don't say Yetzias Mitzrayim, it can still be Yotzei. But the theme is an extension of this original theme. There's also another idea that some point out as far as the moon, and this notion that Chazal praised the Jews for being connected to the moon. So the Ohel Moshe quotes a word about that, that it's to reflect the honor of being a Makabel. We know that the moon is light because it's reflective of the light of the sun. And that's something that is an important role, and we want to highlight that as well. The Gemara tells us that Pnei Moshe Kechama Pnei Hoshua Kelevana, that Yeshua was compared to the moon because he reflected the glory of Moshe. So that ability to do that, to absorb holiness and inspiration and reflect it back and to be able to be Mekabalit, that's a tremendous Maila as well, and that's also something that we are very proud of. So now the Torah goes on to talk about Korban Pesach. In the next pasuk, it says, "Davru kol adas Yisrael le'mor ve'asur la'chodesh hazeh v'yichlu lahem ish sa'al beis avos sa'al bayis." So you should tell the Jews that here on the 10th day, everyone should take a lamb and one for each household. And here, Rabbi Yashin had a comment that we're talking now about Geula and redemption. So the first step is to restore the whole notion of the Jewish family. And in Mitzrayim, the idea of the family was degraded to such an extent. So now we're talking about being redeemed from that. So to focus on rebuilding the family is a major theme. And the next pasuk, it's interesting as well, continues, Yamata Bayis Miyos Misa, Lakahu, Ushkeno Hakarov, Obesob, and Nichsas Nefashos, Ishlefi Achlo, Tahoso Asa. So if you don't have enough people in your household to be able to eat at all, so then you can make a chabura with your friends and neighbors and with those who are close. So the Yalkut has a comment, we say close, so we mean your next door neighbor, maybe even better, your neighbor upstairs, that's even closer, same building. And Rav Moshe Feinstein had a comment about that as well, where he writes that the closer you are to people, the more interaction you have and the more of a influence they have on you. And here again, the Torah is emphasizing that as well. So together with the family, the idea of the social circle, so that becomes a crucial theme that we also are meant to appreciate. Okay, so let's skip ahead a little bit here also. So the Torah talks about the Korban Pesach and about taking the blood and putting it on the mezuzos. Okay, all the details of how to eat it, and some of which we commemorate during our contemporary Seder, and some of which we don't. We don't do Atzli nowadays, but we do matzos and rorim, and that's a whole discussion. It's a separate din of matzah and a separate din of mara. Okay, so let's skip over a little bit. So if you look at Pasuk Yudalef, so Makacha, Tochlu, Oso, Masnechem, Chagurim, Nalechem, Baglechem, Makelchem, Vyadchem, Vyachaltem, Oso, V'chipazon, Pesach, Uba Hashem. So this notion of chipazon, this notion that we are acting with alacrity and with speed, is a crucial theme that we'll expand on a little bit more. But it's also built into the system. So this is a theme that the Beis Halevi talked about, that we understand nowadays that we eat matzah because matzah didn't have time to bake and they were in a rush, they were in a chipazon, so we commemorate that. But the Beis Halevi comments, it really was the other way around, that that was always a part of the plan, and matzah has a theme for us that we need to incorporate into our Yetzias Mitzrayim experience and to appreciate, and therefore the chipazon was preordained. So the idea that the chipazon was a part of the experience wasn't just that we didn't plan well, but it was that part of the hashgacha that there should be chipazon as a dominant theme, and that that's something that we incorporate. So we'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. But let's just look at the next pasuk about Avarti Baris Mitzrayim Balay Lahazav V'Yikesi Kol B'chor Baris Mitzrayim Me'adam V'Abehemu B'chol Elhei Mitzrayim Esa Shvatim Ani Hashem. So now I will go through, and I will strike all the firstborns. V'Haya Hadah V'Haya Hadam Lachem L'Oso Abatim Asher Atem Sham V'Isa Es Hadam U'Fasachti Aleichem. Here's where the Yontif gets his name from. I will see the blood, and I will pass over. There's not going to be a plague on you. So this seems to be this crucial theme that we commemorate this with the name, both in English and Hebrew, Pesach, Passover. It's a way of saying that this distinction between the Jews and the Mitzrayim who ended up being punished is such a crucial idea. And there's an interesting word about the beginning of the pasuk, V'haya Hadam Lachem La'os Al Habatim. So some connect this to a discussion in the Shulchan Aruch Bab, where he talks about a debate that he had with a priest who was trying to refute Judaism and refute the Torah and using scripture to do so. So the priest was saying that you think there's going to be a third temple, you think there's going to be a third Beis HaMikdash. I can prove that there is not going to be, because the pasuk in Haggai that has a lashon of that the second Beis HaMikdash is going to be even greater than the first Beis HaMikdash, and he uses the word Achron. So it sounds like that's it. Sounds like there's only going to be two Batei Mikdash, and there's no third, because the second Beis HaMikdash is referred to as Achron. So the Rashba replied, it's not true, that the word Achron doesn't mean necessarily last and final. It means last in the sense of most recent. So there could still be one later, but we don't mean last forever, we mean the last until now, and there could be one afterwards. And how do you know that? Because the Torah tells us that Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe and Aaron that when they were giving these signs to Paro, if they didn't believe the last sign, so then they'll believe the next one. So you see from there that the word Achron doesn't mean final, because in the same pasuk it's saying, if not for the Achron, then there'll be the one after it. So clearly, Achron doesn't mean ultimate in the sense of the last, but it means most recent. So you can prove that from the pasuk. That's how the Rashba responded. So there are some who suggest to the word that that's what this pasuk is telling us. That the blood, that plague that came after the Osa Achron, and shows you that Achron doesn't mean last, so that's going to be an Osal Habatim. So that's going to be a reference to the Batei Mikdash, so that you see when the or a little bias here, you see that Achron doesn't mean last. You can see that from the Dam. Okay, so cute word. So V'haya Hayom Hazel Lachem Uzikaron V'Chagosom Oso Chag LaHashem V'Dorseichem Chukas Olam T'Chagu. So this will be a Zikaron that we will incorporate into our consciousness, and we should celebrate this every year. And Shivas Yamim Matzos Tochelu Ach B'Yom Harishon Tashbisus Ami Batechem Ki Kol Ochol Chametz V'Nechrusah Nefesh Ahim Yisrael B'Yom Harishon Ad Yom Hashvi. So here the pasuk tells us you should eat matzah 7 days. We normally understand that the obligation of matzah is only the first day, and midrabanan on the second day. So here the Torah making a reference to eating matzah all the 7 days. So this is the basis of the position of the Vilna Gaon and others, that there is a value to eating matzah throughout Pesach. Even if you're not otherwise hungry, so you might say, okay, so I'll just skip carbs for all of Pesach. I can't have bread, but I won't have matzah either. So the Vilna Gaon understood that, no, there's a mitzvah kiyumis of having matzah, that there is a significant act, it's a value to having matzah throughout Pesach. Yerach HaShulchan wrote that this was apparently the Ratz in HaTorah, that it's not formulated as a chiyuv, but that one does accomplish something if he has matzah throughout Pesach. And the Torah also here has the language of tashbisu, so we have a mitzvah to actively get rid of our chametz. And this seems to be in addition to the two lavin that we have, and we'll read in a few seconds about the Baal Yimotzeh, that we're not allowed to own chametz, we're not allowed to have chametz found in our possession, and Baal Yirah, that we shouldn't see any chametz that is ours over the course of Pesach. So there is a whole discussion in the Chasinach and others have about whether Tashbisu is meant simply to be the active form of those negative prohibitions, so we're not allowed to have chametz, so we have to destroy the chametz, or is there a positive value to Tashbisu? And that's a whole discussion. Some say that therefore you should make sure to leave over some chametz specifically so that you can burn the chametz on Erev Pesach in order to actively fulfill this value of Tashbisu. Others said there wasn't any point in doing that, and others that were in the middle and said that maybe the mitzvah specifically is only if you have chametz to destroy, but it doesn't mean there's any purpose to make sure that you have the chametz. But the Torah is telling us one way or another that we're not supposed to have chametz in our possession over the course of Pesach. And there's a lot of discussion as to why this is. And the Ran, in his comments in the beginning of Psachim, suggests that this is what you might call a siag min haTorah. Rabbi Yosef Engel, in his Sefer Lekach Tov, has a list of dinim min haTorah that serve as safeguards. That we normally think that dinim in the Torah are inherent, and that rabbinic law is there to be a safeguard. But as he lists there, there are a number of dinim in the Torah that are there to protect other dinim in the Torah that are serving as a safeguard. So one example he gives, what the Ran says there, that the prohibitions of owning chametz on Pesach, so that is a safeguard so that we shouldn't come to eat the chametz on Pesach. So then the question is, well, why do we need that safeguard? We have other yisuri of achil in the Torah, and we don't have a prohibition of ownership, so we're not allowed to eat chazer, but we don't have a prohibition to have chazer in the house. So why is it that we have to be so much more scared about chametz? So as he notes there, there are two differences between chametz and other machalos asuris. So one is the severity, the nisr kari, so that's a bigger deal, we're more scared of that. But the other is familiarity, that lo b'dili mineh, that the individual is not habituated to avoid chametz. 51 weeks a year, you can eat chametz. So when it comes to pork, if you had a pork sandwich in your fridge for whatever reason, and you woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning and you were hungry, and you found that in your fridge, so you wouldn't be so likely to eat it in your days because you never eat pork, so you're not in the habit of doing that. But if you were to wake up on Pesach night and you were to find a peanut butter sandwich in your fridge, so then you may forget that it's Pesach and you may come to eat it because we're in the habit of eating chametz the whole rest of the year. So the Chasam Sofer writes in one place in a Sefer on Chumash that this pasuk is basically telling you that here, this is the pasuk that contains the word Tashbisu, which is telling you that you have to get rid of chametz. It's not enough that you don't eat chametz on Pesach, but that you have to make sure to actively get rid of it. So why do you have to get rid of it? So he says, so that you can see, that's the rest of the pasuk. The two reasons of the Ran are here in the pasuk. Ki kol ochel chametz v'nichrasa ha-nefesh hi mi-Yisrael. That's a chi of karei, so it's a much more severe onesh. And that it only applies for a limited time. Yom HaRishon and Yom HaShvi, that only for those 7 days do you have this issur. So the two factors together, that most of the time you can eat it, it's only a limited time when you have this prohibition. And it's so severe, it's associated with karies, So, therefore, this is something that we have to take with great care, and that's why we have the Torah itself telling us we have to make a safeguard, and we have to make sure not even to have it. And then the Pasuk tells us, Yom HaRishon Mikra Kodesh, Yom HaShvi'i Mikra Kodesh Yelachem. So the absolute Yontif of Pesach is the first and last days, and there, Kol Melacha Lo Ye'asevahem, Ach Asher Ye'achel L'chol Nefesh Shul Vado Ye'aselachem. And the exception is Ochel Nefesh. So that which is necessary for enjoying Yontif is excluded from this. One is allowed to cook and to carry to the extent, and perhaps other malachos to the extent that it's necessary for Simchas Yontif. And Ochel Nefesh, so it's not everything that could be in that category, but it has to be specifically Shavu L'chol Nefesh. It has to be something that people in general would do, and not something that's a minority kind of act. There's a whole discussion in Poskim that once upon a time, people used to smoke on Yom Tov, because the assumption was that even though smoking is for sure Malacha on Shabbos, but when it comes to Yom Tov, they felt it was in the category of Ochel Nefesh. So many contemporary Poskim will talk about this, and they feel smoking is also all year round. So, for example, by Shlomo Orman, Shlomo Baruch Hu, for Sherez Yosef. So he writes there that smoking is also all year round. But even if you're not worried about that, that on Yom Tov, for sure it's also, because even if once upon a time people thought that it was healthy and that it was Ochel Nefesh, but now most have come around to the idea that it's not, so it wouldn't even qualify for Shavu Ochel Nefesh, and therefore it goes back to being a violation of Hilchos Yom Tov. The notion of Ochel Nefesh and its concept is a discussion the Shachar Sai talked about at length about how exactly we understand it. So it could be on one level that basically it's a din of dechiyah, that really we have an issa malacha that would have been like Shabbos, except that we have the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, and we're not going to be able to do what's necessary to celebrate Yom Tov unless certain malachos are relaxed. So therefore, it's basically Simchas Yom Tov overriding what otherwise would have been an issa malacha in and of itself. And the Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, the Ramban understands it differently. And the Ramban understands that the gedder of malacha on Yom Tov is actually different than malacha on Shabbos. And when it comes to Shabbos, so we know we're not allowed to do anything that is a change in the world. It doesn't have anything to do with exertion or labor, but it has to do with the concept of creative acts. So the Torah, when it talks about Yom Tov, so it uses the language of Malachas Avoda. So the Ramban says that's a way of saying that it's not all Malacha that is prohibited on Yom Tov, but specifically Malacha that's about Avoda, that's about labor. But that excludes Ochel Nefesh, that which is for your personal enjoyment, and therefore that's the nature of the Heter of Ochel Nefesh. The Ramban also says it's why in the beginning of Vayakel, we'll read in a few weeks, so the Torah singles out a malacha of Lo Sivaru Esh B'chom Osh Vaseich and B'yom HaShabbos, we can't do Havara on Shabbos, and the Gemara and others try to figure out why is that one malacha listed. Most of the malachas, 39 malachas, are not spelled out in the Torah, but Havara for some reason gets singled out. So the Ramban writes it's because that represents the difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos. So on Yom Tov you could do Havara L'tzarech Ochel Nefesh, but on Shabbos you can't. So the Torah specifically highlights that that which you can do on Yom Tov is Ochel Nefesh here is not permitted on Shabbos. So here is next pasuk is highly significant. Pasuk Yitzayim, Ushmartem es amatzos, ki be'etzem yom hazeh l'tzeisi, es vaseichem e'eretz Mitzrayim, Ushmartem es yom hazeh l'dariseichem, chukas olam. So the idea of Ushmartem es amatzos, there is a lot there to understand, that the idea, first of all, of making sure we watch the matzos so that they don't become chametz. So there's a din minatori here of shmira on the matzos. And we talked about different kinds of lishma earlier in the year. So when it comes to the notion of matzah lishma, so it seems as many understand that it's connected to this, that we should watch it so that it doesn't turn into chametz. But also Chazal have a drasha here that Ushmartem es amatzos mikan she'ein lachmitzen es amitzvos, that this is not just about matzah, it's about mitzvahs in general. And the idea that we have to do mitzvos promptly and with alacrity and not let them become chametz is a theme that we find many different expressions in Chazal, with its reason, like the Imla mitzvos, or Shihuye mitzvos lo meshahinan, or Ema avirna ha mitzvos. And there's a lot of discussion, a lot of analysis as to why we have different phrases and what the differences are between them, and there presumably are differences, but they all speak to this idea of time and of acting quickly. So the notion specifically of being connected here and being connected with matzah, so Rav Huttner in his essays in Pachir Yitzchak, I think the first essay in Pesach, talks about this idea that this is a notion specifically embedded into the idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim, because similar to what we said before about HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, that we want to understand that we are in control of time and that we have a responsibility for time, and that therefore we want to show that by, so to speak, to the extent possible, by taking control over time and not letting time defeat us, not just sitting back and letting things become chametz, letting time win out over us, but we do what we can to stay on top of time and to make sure that things don't leaven, don't become chametz. So this notion, which is so crucial here, is not just about matzah and the chametz, but it's about the whole notion of mitzvos, and this is also embedded into our Yetzias Mitzrayim, because the notion of chavivas ha-mitzvos is also a part of what we are declaring at this time, that we are beginning this relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So matzah is symbolic here of all the other mitzvos that we are going to show, that we are careful about them. And you find this, for example, also that the idea of not eating matzah on Erev Pesach and preserving our appetite for the Seder. So there are different languages you can find in the Rambam and elsewhere, whether this is about because we want to do the mitzvah of matzah behidr, or it's an expression in general of chavivas ha-mitzvos, which we find many references here too, that there is an extrapolation from here to mitzvos in general. And presumably this makes sense in the context of the Gula, because this is what we are now going into. We're going into a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu that's about mitzvos, that we are excited about and that we want to show that enthusiasm. Rashid Karmi Avna, Rav Goldwicht, has a whole essay about this idea of Ushmartim as Amatzos and Mikan Shem Achmis as Amitzvos, where he focuses on a different aspect. And he talks about the notion of ritzifus, that the idea of consistency, and that the idea that there's a comparison between mitzvos and chametz. So what exactly does that mean? So if you leave the dough to leaven, so then it turns into bread. And if you leave the mitzvah, you don't do it so quickly, so then what's the comparison there? So he develops the whole theme there about the idea of mitzvah goreris mitzvah and schar mitzvah mitzvah, that the notion of a accomplished religious life is one where there's a cumulative effect of all the mitzvahs, that every mitzvah prepares you and brings you onto a higher level for the next mitzvah. So the idea of mitzvah goreris mitzvah is that you are in a different place to fulfill the next mitzvah because of what you did in the first mitzvah. So it's crucial that you don't allow a yirida to happen in between. It's crucial that there is a ritzifus, that there is this continuity. So therefore, this notion of acting quickly when it comes to mitzvahs, just like with the matzah, if you leave it to go, it's going to leaven and it's going to lose its status. So too, the power of a mitzvah to keep you on a path and to have a cumulative growth is going to get lost if you don't act with a certain speed, and that's perhaps also the theme here. So now the psukim continue: Barishon ba'avasa yom lachodesh be'erev tochu matzos ad yom ha'echad ve'esrim lachodesh be'erev shivas yamim se'or lo yematzei v'teichem ki kolocho machmeses v'nichrusa ha'nefesh ahi me'adas Yisrael v'ger v'ezra ha'aretz. So here now the Torah re-emphasizes this theme, as we mentioned before. So the whole discussion about whether tashbisu and ba'al yematzei are two halves of the same idea or not, or are they two separate dinim? But here now the Torah is telling us, well, you might say, we'll also find a parallelist of Ba'yirah, But it's also the language here, similar to what the Chassam Sofer was saying, that this does support the Ran's position, that the language here also seems to be saying that the purpose of Bayu Matzah and not having chametz in your house is because it can get you in trouble. You can be subject to karis if you eat it. So the flow here seems to certainly support that. So you shouldn't have it in your house, because if you were to eat it, so then you would be in trouble. So that does seem to be supported. That's the idea of Bayu Matzah. But it's interesting. One could speculate if really Bayu Ra'ah, the parallel here, the other partner concept, that we're not supposed to own chametz expressed as not seeing chametz. So is that really also for that purpose? That's how many express it, that Bayra, Bayi Matzah are a pair, and they're both there to prevent you from owning chametz, which is itself there to prevent you from eating chametz. But perhaps we could say a little differently, that Bayra actually has a different purpose. And if you look at the way it's conveyed, both in Sefer Shmos and Sefer Dvarim, that it sounds like that's maybe a din in Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, that when you're talking about the whole story of the Exodus and this notion of chipazon is so crucial. So to have chametz in the background as you're sitting at your Seder table, and you'll have chametz on the shelf behind you, so that's going to undermine the whole theme of Yetzias Mitzrayim and what we're trying to convey. So perhaps there's a different purpose for each of these dinim, that Bayroa is there to not undermine our Haggadah and our Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Bayu Matzah, like the Pesukim indeed seem to say, is there to prevent us from eating chametz. It also mentioned the suggestion that perhaps the practice of the Klal Yisrael to embrace Mechiras Chametz among great controversy, that maybe the accomplishment of Mechiras Chametz is that if we understand that the purpose of not having the chametz is to keep us from eating it, so if we are committed enough to avoiding gezel and to honesty, so as long as we assign the title of the chametz to a non-Jew, if we sell it to him so it's his property, even though we know we're going to reacquire it after Pesach, and even though we know that's what happens every year, but the fact is, over the course of Pesach, there's an issue of gezel associated with it, so perhaps that accomplishes the goal. We're saying that we want to make sure we don't come to eat the chametz, so two ways to do that. Don't have any at all, or if there is some around, but it's not yours, and there's gezel attached to it, so then that would be enough also to keep us away from the chametz. And maybe there's a positive message there as well, because the Smag says that we're looking for geula, so geula can't happen if the Jews aren't perceived as an honest people, because it'll be a chil Hashem. So when the Jews are recognized as people of integrity and honesty, so then there can be a geula. So maybe we develop a practice around Pesach time, we talk about geula, to enter into a monetary transaction with Umas HaOlam, and we take it so seriously, we're so careful about it, that we're willing to stake our karis on it, that we are going to be so careful not to touch the chametz that's not ours, that will successfully keep us away from the Yisr Karis of chametz, and that itself is a very powerful statement. But if that's the approach, you have to really be careful not to use it, not to touch the chametz at all, because that's the whole presumption, that the respect for the ownership of the chametz is what's keeping us away from it. So here the Aliyah ends with what might be in a similar category, Kol machmetzos leisachelu b'chol moshvaseichem tocho matzos. So you should eat matzos only, and that's the end of the Aliyah, but also Kol machmetzos you shouldn't have. So you know, Chazal understand that this is also a reference to not chametz gomer, but other things that are taruvus of chametz, a mixture of chametz, other things that are in the world of chametz, but are not actual chametz gomer. So there is an isser as well. So there was an interesting machlokas, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, in the beginning of the third parak of Psachim, that the Mishnah talks about this, talks about that which is included in this din of kol machmetzes, and the so the Mishnah has a language of Eibel Overim, that this is what is over. So what it means, over, so Rashi understands that it means you're over on Bayirah, Bayi Matzah. You're not even allowed to own that which is in the category of Kol Machmetzes, and a level of Minhag Torah. And Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, and Rabbeinu Tam says that no, there's no Isser Bayirah, Bayi Matzah there, that Eibel Overim means Overim and Ashulchan. It means you shouldn't have it on your table, but there's not an Isser of Bayura Bayimatse. So that's itself interesting, because the language of Rabbeinu Tam there is that you wouldn't have both Bayura Bayimatse and Kol Machmetzes relevant here, because if it wasn't for the pasuk, it wouldn't even be aser. So that's a hard idea to understand. If it wasn't for a pasuk, nothing would be aser. So what does that mean? So I thought maybe you could say that if we do assume that Bayura Bayimatse is a gzeirim in Torah, so the notion of Kol Machmetzes might also be another gzeirim. Maybe that's what Rabbeinu Tam is telling us, that this is another gzeirim in Torah, another step that's meant to keep us away from chametz. So we don't combine the two. We don't say in gozerim gzeirim gzeirim. Now, normally, you assume that that's only by dinam d'rabbanan, that usually we're talking about rabbinic law, and we don't double up rabbinic laws. We're saying gozerim gzeirim gzeirim. So that's what you would have thought. But Rav Yosef Engel quotes from the Prima Gadim that applies that even when dealing with dinim and hatorah that are perceived as gzeros, that we wouldn't combine them. We'd say ein gozerin gzera l'gzera, and he thought that's a pella. That's really a concept that makes sense by rabbinic law. It shouldn't make sense by Torah law. So I thought maybe to support Rav Yosef Engel, or support the Prima Gadim rather, he could say there's a raya, that's the position of Rabbeinu Tam. But maybe what Rabbeinu Tam is saying is that Bayra Bayimatse is a gzera, and Kol Machmetzes is a gzera. So we wouldn't combine the two. We would have one at a time, we wouldn't combine both of them, because they're both safeguards. And maybe that's what he means when he says, if it wasn't for the pasuk, it wouldn't be usur, meaning that it's not inherently bad, it's something that is necessary to make a safeguard. So it's not usur for its own reasons, it's usur there as a distancing method, and therefore we don't have to combine it with Bayura Bayimatse. So maybe that's a little bit of a support for that idea that Prima Gadim had, that even on a Daraisa level, so you have such a thing. But it's a lot there, that the whole notion of recognizing just how important the symbolism of matzah and of chametz, and the role that that has in understanding the themes of freedom and the themes of avoda and our zrizos, there's so much packed into here. Maybe when it comes to Pesach time, we'll be able to say a little bit more about these ideas. But for now, we're chippazim because we're running out of time, so we'll stop here. But to take these very lofty notions of really all of Yetzias Mitzrayim and our origins as a nation that are all packed into this aliyah, so we hear this land of Shabbos, hopefully we'll be able to internalize some of these ideas and to reinforce the notion of what it really means to be free, what it really means to have control over our time and decide how to spend it, and we should be zochet to be worthy of that ability. I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos. It should be only good things, and we'll see you, God willing, on Sunday.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.